Thank you. Yes, I'm Eric Bremer from Western Ag Innovations, and we'll be talking this morning about soil nutrient supply rates in natural and constructed wetlands in the oil sands region way up in Canada and Alberta. And I'm not only sort of much far away, but I'm also not really so much I come from an ag background, and so I really must acknowledge my co-authors here who have really did most of the actual work in that area, from the University of Waterloo, Megan Wood, Maren McRae, Felix Mountain-Washi, and Richard Petrone, Kevin DeVito from the University of Alberta, and Tariq Murnier and Maria Strack from the University of Calgary. Just very quick background. We have about 13% of the oil reserves up in our oil sands region up there. And currently, like in 2013, about 500 kilometer squared area of that was actively being mined. And before it was mined, half of it was wetland. So it's a boreal forest area with half of it being wetland. And so at the end of the day, the idea was is that we have to have equivalent land capability, wetlands again. And perhaps it won't be 50%, they're talking maybe 10 to 33%, but still, you know, if they're thinking about the whole area, at the end of the day, we're going to have to basically construct something like between at least a minimum of about 400 or 500 square kilometers of wetland, and maybe as much as 1,600 square kilometers of wetland. And most of these wetlands, before we started mine them, are in peatlands. So they'll have meters of peat, fens and bogs is most of it. There are marshes and many other areas as well. Then we come along and we take away all the vegetation and we take away 10,000 years of peat, and then we keep digging. We basically got oil saturated sands, and so you can see by the time they've done this, there's not even a whiff or a memory of what was there before. And ultimately, we want it to maybe look something like this again. So let's just say there might be some challenges here. So we've got complete removal. We basically have to reconstruct the whole watershed, the uplands and the wetland areas, and make sure that they're functioning together again. The hydrology is pretty complex because actually it's a fairly dry area. We get less rainfall than potential evapotranspiration in a lot of years, and so we're quite dependent on the storage, on groundwater, and how that works to keep wetlands functioning in that area. And then besides all those heavy equipment and stuff we see out there, we've also got a lot of elevated salinity and a lot of toxicity from the whole operation. So, big job. Where I come from and where it was appropriate for this talk was we actually work with trying to measure soil nutrients using ion exchange membranes. And this is just these, we call them plant root simulator probes, but they're essentially ion exchange membranes. They're either positive or they're negative, and they'll attract anions or cations, and we bury them in the soil for different types of periods, and they don't really, they're passive, so they don't mind being in a peat or in a mineral soil. And they're just used in situ, and we measure 14 different elements on those. And starting maybe about 14, 15 years, about 5 years ago, we started to get a lot of course researchers starting to use our PRS probes up in wetlands, all over actually, but in particular in the oil sands. And in order to try to understand better, I've been doing a lot of interacting with these. What are we sort of seeing with these things? How might they be used perhaps in a monitoring type application? So this first graph is some data from Megan Wood, and what we're showing on the graph here is basically the milligrams per meter squared of membrane adsorbed on the membranes over a 3-week burial period, and we have ammonium and nitrate, and then what we have is drain bogs, natural bogs, which we sort of have an ascending increased moisture as we're going this way. The other big thing about these things in their natural state, which is where we're starting from, is that we always have microtopography going on. We've got our hummocks and our hollows, and they just behave completely different. And what we can see, like with ammonium, is that, you know, they're always increasing in the hollows, and we have this trend as well moving upward. And in most soils, we've got very little ammonium showing up on the membranes, very, you know, less than 2 or something like that. And so we can see what happens with that. Nitrate, on the other hand, is we're really only seeing it in the drier parts of the microtopography, and it tends to be declining somewhat. But these levels here are essentially almost at background. They're very low compared to any other system that we're working with. So let's look at some other elements, because we measure them all at the same time. Sulfur. First off, notice that's in a log scale. So what we quite often see is in most of our systems, there isn't much sulfur around. We're about 10 milligrams per square meter. But in some systems, we got like 2 orders of magnitude higher sulfur. And essentially what's happening with that, and you'll see it here, it's also it's reflected in the calcium. This is the salts effect. We got a lot of gypsum, and if that... And you can see there's this big difference. Again, if you've got your water flowing with the nutrients like the calcium and the sulfur, you can get these humongous, you can really see it sticks out. Whereas in most of the other systems, in our wetland systems there, they're naturally, these levels are all extremely low compared to any of our mineral soils. Iron and manganese, we've been talking a little bit about that. And again, by the way, these are medians plus or minus 95% confidence intervals. So we're seeing a lot of variability, especially in these elements compared to some of the other ones, a lot of that microsite stuff going on. But again, we really only, naturally the levels should, they're like 2 to 5 milligrams. That's what you'll see. And in these wetland systems, we can see them actually up to 1,000 milligrams per square meter. So they can really... They sort of jump out at you when you get samples from wetland systems. And again, they're sort of reflecting in the wetter areas. And another thing, up in that area, there's a lot of higher pH soils. We see this much more consistently with our manganese than we do with our iron. Just quick note is that we actually find most of the iron and the manganese, at least in the short term, they actually get trapped on our anion probes. And on our anion probes, I mean, they're not, you say, oh, they're cations. What are they doing over there? Well, we have some EDTA on our anion probes. And essentially, that's really the mobile form, at least when we put our probes in, the mobile form of iron and manganese is still actually an anion. In other words, it's complex to ligands and moving with the organics. So next study I'm going to just quickly is from Kevin DeVito and Claire Oswald and Rich Petrone, and they were looking at, again, this is natural type wetlands, and looking at disturbed and or undisturbed and some burnt areas. And again, we could see this huge jump in, for example, phosphorus on our membranes, with burning. We see a very similar thing happening with the potassium in the hollow, not quite the same thing happening with the hummock. This here is, again, one site where we've got our gypsum water flow. We got a lot of sulfur and a lot of calcium in the hollows, and the hummock, which are like a whole foot away, you're not seeing it at all. Over in Wandering River, studied by Tariq Munir, what they're looking at here was effects of 10 years of drainage versus undisturbed. And this is in a bog-type system. And so now, first, just quick look at the sulfur and the calcium. And the levels there are really very low, but somewhat increased by drainage. Again, we get this fairly clear signal that the phosphorus was increasing or decreasing due to drainage. The potassium, I'm not sure those differences are significant. But again, it just shows you some of the kind of things that we can kind of see looking with these things. Oh, the other thing I wanted to just kind of mention, in this study they actually buried them from anywhere from basically 4 weeks up to 12 weeks, so 4, 8, and 12, and they really didn't see much of a difference between them, because essentially what's happening with these ion exchange membranes is, like, once they're absorb their nutrients. If you don't got anything else happening to displace them and change them, they'll just stay where they are. And actually, a lot of the chemistry in a wet system is happening fairly quickly. So it's a matter of fact, we can get a clear signal within hours of putting these in, one day to 1 week, and they're probably going to be telling you pretty well what's going on, unless something really drastically changes. But lots of people do much longer burial periods. Now I'm going to just show you a couple of examples from some constructed fins. So this is a fairly recent project. Here's Felix Nwashi in his snowshoes on about 2 meters of peat on top of another half a meter of sand. Totally constructed. The wetlands around it were also constructed. It's about a 9-hectare area. And what he is looking at is different ways of revegetating this plot area. And he used the PRS probes in that study and as well in a reference type fin. And we can see that, so this is basically the second year after construction was completed. Nitrate always very low, but it was going down during the growing season with the pilot fin, going up during the growing season in the reference fin, so behaving quite different. In the pilot fin, there's no phosphorus there, much higher levels in the reference fin. The pilot fin is still dominated by salts, not so much in the reference fin. Iron and manganese were much higher in our reference fin area than in our pilot. So, you know, at this point, which isn't too surprising, even though we put lots of peat back, the quality of the peat and the quality of the wetland is not anywhere close yet to what, you know, great. The last example I have, these are actually were done in marshes, and what they did, this was Karsten Slama, and he took these PRS probes and he went into marshes beneath about 30, 50 centimeters of water, and he just stuck them in horizontally, and he left them in there for about 4 days. And he did that in some natural wetlands, some wetlands that were constructed but not contaminated, some with that were contaminated either with processed water or processed materials. And he was finding, what they're trying to figure out was why did they get so much more growth in these natural and uncontaminated than the other guys. And they could see that, you know, yes, they had a lot more manganese again in our natural wetlands. And also, the phosphorus and the manganese were both high in there compared to the other systems. And they could kind of pick out why it is. And at the end of the day, they had to say that it wasn't nutrients. It was actually probably being more toxic effects. So how could we use these perhaps, you know, for doing further monitoring? Because they're so, you know, they're fairly easy to use. Stick them in. You can put them in probably even just for a few days, for a few hours if you're just doing a quick snapshot. But other people can also leave them in for much longer periods. So it's kind of handy that way. They seem to be very sensitive to the nutrients from the groundwater, redox potential, the many different things affecting that. And I think we can get some better idea of how that compares to, you know, when you're doing it to make sure you can get a consistent number, and then how that is related to some of the other things that we're interested in seeing happen that could make it be a good match. So thank you very much. Thank you.
We have time for one fast question. Rob? Sorry.
The peat for the constructed site, is that reclaimed from the they're required to store that?
Yeah, they are required to store that. They actually mix up a lot of it and use it on upland areas, which has actually been not good because it mineralizes too fast on the upper areas. They actually should be getting it either back here or doing something different. It's actually another part of the problem.
Thanks.